It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. You know, Pella has a window type for every home and every budget. You might know Pella for its award-winning wood windows, but did you know that Pella also has a complete line of industry-leading patented fiberglass and vinyl windows? For more information on the patented fiberglass and vinyl windows, check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my friends at Runza. Well, I know I'm talking to an audience that understands the value of a run game, and that's what Nebraska established against Rutgers on the road. So you got to establish a run game in football, but at lunch, you got to establish the Runza game. That's an original Runza cheeseburger, maybe a little onion rings, double dipped in the homemade batter, a little bit of pop to top it off. Oh, Lord have mercy. In football, you establish the run, like Nebraska did. At lunch, you establish the Runza. It's that simple. Get to Runza today and get yours. Tell them your friend Nick Baugh sent you. Okay, recap pod. A victorious recap pod. Nebraska takes down Rutgers on a Friday night football tilt in a very cold Piscataway. A little snow in the stands. Lots to dissect with this one. Nebraska wins 28-21. So let's get to it. Here's yours truly and former Husker All Big 12 linebacker Bo Rude breaking it all down. Enjoy. All right, well, here we are on a Saturday recap pod after a little Friday night, a little TGIF action. Nebraska takes down Rutgers 28-21 in what looked like a little chilly night in Piscataway. Bo Robert Rude is here. Did we like the Friday night game? Did you enjoy that it was you got to get your Friday night football game right?
Yes, I wanted it to just get to me before I had time to think about it. So it was kind of nice. It was just you got done with your work day and you had some dinner and you're, oh, the game's on.
See,
kind of nice.
That's right. I haven't gotten, and it really doesn't matter because it's like there's not a crowd anyways. Like, I've actually kind of liked that all the games have been at 11 o'clock throughout this season. I'm like, I just want to like wake up and like, I don't want to wait around for the game.
I love Husker football so much that sometimes the waiting during the day, it almost wastes too much of the day.
Yes.
The nice part with the early games is you wake up, it's there, and then you have like a half a day, half a Saturday.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, that you just go, I can do something else now.
See, everybody's like, oh, 11 a.m. again. Every time I was like, yes.
I really like it. I mean, it's not as good for tailgating potentially.
No, so but that doesn't matter. Like, it, you know, like
not
no
this
one's
year.
Doing that.
Not this year. But normally.
Normally, I get it. Like, you have a big game, you want it to be 7 o'clock kick, whatever, get everybody time to get all lubed up and all that. But, like, for the situation, I've been all about these 11 a.m. kicks.
How much would you pay right now to be in a crowded parking lot?
Somebody's, with a red Solo cup?
A red Solo cup and somebody's grilling something at the tailgate next to you. You're like, if you want some, it's yours. And you're like, sorry, it's so crowded here. I'm having a great time.
I like the idea of a tailgate. I could never be the host of a tailgate because I don't have like that, like the planning and tricking it out. And like, I figured out how to finagle my TV in the bed of my,
you could do that. That is something that you absolutely never want to do.
Well, I don't have that in me.
No,
I don't have that in me.
It's a lot of work.
These people that do big ass tailgates, it's a lot of work.
I love those people because I could maybe do it. I know you could never do it.
No, I could never do it.
You don't like the thought of that.
I don't like that. Like the tailgates you and I always go to, someone's got a cooler in their trunk and that's the extent of it.
Yeah, I mean I've done those. I've never done the I'm bringing the grill, I'm bringing the TV.
Too much.
We got friends that do it and they're awesome at it.
Yeah.
And I love him. We're the muchos.
You ever gone over and walked by, I think John Bowling and his whole crew have one. Johnny Bowling does like the biggest tailgate.
Well, he's smoking meat for like, you know, 17 hours. It's, that's all. Yeah,
that's too much.
I love him. I love him because we're going to use it.
I know.
We're gonna eat it.
I didn't. Before we get into the game, did you have a good feeling about the game? How did you? I had no sense of what was going to happen.
I got the sense that the team was really tired.
Right.
And that's a fact. I mean, when a coach says we're tired the week of the, that means you're so tired that any pretending you can't even do anymore.
Yes.
Normally teams get tired. You don't mention. We were so tired. We were like, we're tired.
Well, and so that's the. There's a lot of different things to talk about. And I guess I want to start with what you build off of what you said, though, from I don't want to lower the bar to the point of where we're praising like effort and want to and all those things. But like, I don't think, and Dirk kind of wrote about this after the game. I don't think there's a lot you can take from that game and extrapolate it into like, hey, here, the Nebraska's going to get ready to clear a space out for a banner to come. But like, I do, people question the culture or the locker room or whatever. The fact that they clearly, in a pandemic, in a season that they've been going at this for a long time, they continue to lose. They continue to have to get stuff shoved up their nose, and they're having to get tested every week. Like, and now they're going on the road to play Rutgers in an empty stadium, and it's freezing out, and there's a bunch of snow. The fact that they still. Now they're not always the it's sloppy and all that stuff, but like they clearly are still fighting. They're still playing hard. They're still playing with passion. Again, I'm not saying that that's should be the only thing we think about, but like we gotta tip our cap to that.
Well, no, that's important that you acknowledge that you even see that, because this is a season where multiple teams have quit on their coaches.
Yes.
We're talking Michigan. We were talking Purdue. You saw what happened with Purdue. They were mentally done. A few of these teams have kind of quit.
Right.
And we have our own set of major issues. That's true. But the thing, if you're going to be, optimistic about something, is that this team continues to play and be resilient through their own mistakes.
Right.
And they continue to be physical, and they show up looking like they at least want to be there. Like, that to me is a great sign, because I feel like that was one of the issues that they were struggling with before, the end of the Riley era. It was games were, getting beat by 60, and that's a much worse problem than losing by 7 every week. But at least we're physical. We're physical, man. We're the team that seems to hit the hardest now.
Yes, and yes, there's an element of physicality that, like, the only way you can lay the wood is if you want to be there. You can't, like, ho-hum,
no,
de-cleat somebody. You know what I mean? Like, that's a sign that you want to be there. And I just think it's a really interesting window into, like, because you kind of sit there when things aren't going well, and you go, man, what's it? What's going on over there? What's it like Monday through Friday? What's the relationship? What's that locker room like? What's the relationship like? Well, I think it has to be decent.
Yeah.
Like, sure. It has to be. I think the camaraderie amongst the team has to be decent. I think the relationship from the coaching staff and the players has to be decent. Because if it wasn't, nothing will reveal where a relationship stands more so than adversity, especially in sports. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't love your teammates, love your locker room, love your coaches, when shit hits the fan, it's gonna show.
Yeah, I think I felt that my senior year when the stuff hit the fan, and our coaching staff, some of them, the players had good relationships, but there was others where it was a disconnect. With Callahan and that, there was a disconnect there.
Totally,
and it showed up, and you felt the team just go, "You've lost us," and you felt like a coach sort of be like, "And I've lost you," and they can be done sometimes too, and that's where I saw none of that out of our squad this year, which is a great sign.
That I don't know how big it is, but it's something, like. Because here's the thing, if without that, It doesn't. None of this is going to matter. If guys are quitting on each other, guys don't want to be there. Guys don't. You know, there's a disconnect between the coaches and the players. All this stuff. Like, if any of that was prevalent, it was going to show up this year.
Yeah,
and that hasn't happened. Like, you saw the sideline at times yesterday was fired up.
Yeah,
you know, Mills had a long run, and Honus and Henrich, I think, are jumping on him, and Colin Miller is still going nuts. And of course, the Ultimate Warrior, anytime he makes a play, goes freaking crazy, which I just love. So I guess I wanted to start with at least acknowledging that.
Yeah.
And you can roll your eyes and act like I'm talking about like some after school special corny shit. Like, no, like it matters. It matters. I was fortunate enough that I never really played on a team that like things fell apart. But you can, if you don't love your teammates and love your coaches and love what's going on, it'll show.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I think that's good to acknowledge that, though, because it is in this sort of situation, it's almost unique that we are that resilient. I mean, that game alone, like the fact that they won that game, it's a testament to that
that's
team.
That's what I'm saying. It's this team has had every opportunity in the world to just quit throughout the season.
Yeah.
And then, to your point, in a lot of ways, that game was a microcosm of the season. Like, it had all the ingredients of the season wrapped into one game. And they had, you know how easy it would have been for them to be like, man, it's 20 degrees. We are losing. We just turned it over again. Like,
Kickoff return.
Okay, just now, like, screw it, dude.
Okay,
screw it.
Let me ask all the Nebraska fans out there. After the kickoff return, how many of you honestly can say you thought we were winning that game? I bet you it was less than 10% said, right, we're still in there. We're going to win this. I think most people went, here we go again, and it's over. I think they thought it was over then.
Let me pull up my notes in my phone because I'm trying to remember the –
because we drove
down. It was a crazy sequence. It was Nebraska had a great drive that ends in a touchdown. It ended in the long touchdown run from Martinez.
Yeah.
Then the ensuing kickoff, Cruikshank house calls it. And then the next offensive possession, Martinez throws his second interception. See, to me, it was after the second.
Yeah.
It was more so at when Martinez threw the high pick, I was like, 0% chance Nebraska's winning this game. Zero.
It was hard not to, though.
And so I guess it's because we're already getting into some of the things. It is just, it's pretty amazing to think that Nebraska had 4 turnovers, 9 penalties, gave up a kickoff return for a touchdown, gave up a fake punt conversion to the Australian. I mean.
Oh, Crikey. They've lost contain again.
We get the Bloomin' Onion got a first down. So we give a fake punt conversion, had horrible field position the whole night. The Aussie kept pinning our ass.
The Aussie pinned us. We couldn't kick off or cover. I mean.
So think of, I guess, how many games do you win in the history of football? Can you say, like, if there was like a massive database of college and NFL football, like how many games have someone won when they've had 4 turnovers, gave up a kickoff return for a touchdown and a fake punt? Like, I would say lifetime, those people are like 0-2,000 in games.
What's funny is Frost was quoted saying that same thing and said, if you looked around this year, anybody that had da-da-da-da-da-da-da, he goes, I don't think anybody won doing that. Like, right. it's such an anomaly to do those main things wrong.
Right.
And I mean,
and still win. So I guess the thing that's just remarkable is to say all that stuff out loud and that Nebraska then still won the game.
It's hard to understand almost, but that shows you that we're somewhere on the, like, I don't even know if it's the right path. We're somewhere better than Rutgers where we can do that and win, but we're not good enough yet where we're going to be
That's
competing
so
in the championship.
Nebraska's
so.
Somewhere in between the worst team in the conference and also capable of
winning our division
of like of that of like
of doing everything you can do wrong and still racking up over 600 yards of offense, holding Rutgers to 252 yards of offense and winning. You know, like usually if you're bad, right? Like if you're bad, one of the hallmarks of bad teams is if they have a lot of self-inflicted wounds, they don't have any chance in the world of overcoming them. And what's amazing is we've acknowledged the fact that Nebraska's not talented to overcome these self-inflicted wounds, but at the same time, every single Saturday, they have these self-inflicted wounds and they either win or they lose by a score. And that's kind of hard to make sense of, you know?
I think that's where, as a fan base, we're all scratching our heads. I don't think we're all going, it's hopeless. We're not all going, oh, it's here. It's coming. It's just around the corner. We're all kind of going, wait, what's going on?
It's really, I don't think I've seen a season and a team, and then extrapolating it into the program moving forward, that is harder to sink your teeth into exactly where they're at. Because on one hand, they feel like they're terrible and have a long ways to go. But then on the other hand, they're right there almost every weekend. You know what I mean? So it's hard to, I mean, again, Frost's record is not good, but 12 of his 20 or 21 losses, whatever it is now, are by one score.
Yeah.
So I guess you would think, like, okay, so if you sit there and go, you are the company you keep. You're one of the worst teams in the Power Conference over the last handful of years. You're hanging out with Kansas and Rutgers and all these other teams. Like, those teams are getting their doors blown off.
Yeah.
Nebraska isn't.
Well, for the first time, we're not, too. We've always historically kind of, when we lost, it's been 15 years of losing big.
Right. Like, now we were just talking before, like, Pelini's issue was, he was winning nine games a year, but like his three losses were in like spectacular fashion.
Yeah.
And even Riley had a lot of his losses were just like getting your shit rocked.
End of the Riley era was big, lots of big losses. That's why he was out. But
and so it's just, it's odd. It's an odd thing to try to make sense of.
Well, maybe we need to start with the man at the helm, Taylor Martinez.
Adrian Martinez. We got plenty of
always money, do
but I do too all the time. I'm like, Taylor Martinez. Because in some ways, he had an interesting game. There were some really good moments, and then there were some moments that you say to yourself, I don't know if you're like me. There are moments I'm sitting there watching the game last night, and a play would happen, and I'm like, I don't know. He's not the guy moving forward. And I think he can get Nebraska, like, I think he's good enough to maybe get Nebraska to that next step.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next play will come and be like, I don't know how you start him moving forward.
I think when we start scratching our head, doesn't it begin and end with him? Because he's kind of what we've hung our hat on is like going to be the program. And we still don't know what he is.
Right. But do we? Like, I guess what I'm questioning.
I don't know.
Like, I'm just kind of playing, you know, a-hole devil's advocate for the sake of it. Like, because I'm with you. A part of me goes, like, right now, if we're all, you know, we're jurors, we're sequestered, and they're saying, have you guys reached a verdict? Like, a part of me is like, no. But then it's like, well, dude, like, all the evidence, what more do you need to see?
Exhibit OJ A. Exhibit the A. On hold again? On. Exhibit A. I'd like to object. Exhibit A. This is the year 2018. It was a game against Ohio State University. He was as good as any of them. I object. I want this dismissed from the record.
I want to dismiss the objection. Year one doesn't matter. Stanley Morgan and Divino Zigbo is there.
Exhibit B, Stanley Morgan. 74 catches, 1,016 yards.
I mean, honestly, though, but you see what I'm saying? Like, there's a part of me that feels like if I'm in the trial of Adrian Martinez, I'm a juror. Wish we got plenty there to reach a verdict.
You think he's guilty is what you're saying.
Right now, it'd be hard for me to not say, you know what? I want to check out of this hotel. I've been in this hotel for 3 years.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm ready to say he's guilty of not being the guy. But then every once in a while, you look back at the evidence, which is a play or two in the Rutgers game, and you go, his deep ball to Wandale. You're like, God, good fucking throw,
bro. He was 24 for 28 in that game. But his two of his four incompletions were bad interceptions.
Bad throws and then two bad fumbles. And so you go, you just leave, you leave scratching your head again.
Yeah. He was basically four bad plays away from playing a unbelievable game, but the four bad plays were so bad that I think if Luke McCaffrey isn't hurt, he gets benched after that interception in the first half.
I was going to say, in some ways, it was kind of good that Luke wasn't available because it forced Adrian to play through it. It forced Frost to have to stick with him. And you saw the value in allowing someone to play through mistakes. Because I'm telling you right now, I don't know if, like, let's say Luke's available. And after that, the first pick or whatever, because I think the first pick after the first fumble, did it go fumble, pick?
It was fumble, and then the pick was going in.
Yeah,
In the first half.
Yeah. The Rutgers guy makes a great all-world play. But still, I mean,
don't turn it over, what are you doing, dude?
Yeah, don't throw it in the end zone. At some point, like, you got to stop doing that. But I don't know, like, if they make a QB change and Luke comes in, does Nebraska win that game? Maybe with the way Mills was running the ball, maybe. But I don't know. I'm not totally sure.
Martinez's second half was pretty – I mean, the one throw was bad, and then the rest of the half was good. I mean, he's 24 for 28.
He still has – and we talked about this, I think this was last week on the recap pod. He still is a bizarre runner where – now, he finally scored on one, but there was one scramble where
– he ran sideways.
At one point, he ran – straight laterally sideways towards the sideline. Yeah. And you kind of go, he doesn't finish runs very well.
No.
And I swear, he doesn't think score when he runs.
No, he looks like, I don't look comfortable in the open field.
Right.
Where, you know, that was a game especially too. There was, if you have somebody really dangerous running, when he had the whole field three or four times where it's like, that's where we got to have guys that make plays and score. And even Mills, like, get in the end zone. Do you know what I'm saying? Because we almost don't get in whenever we get down to the three, there's like, it's a 50-50 whether we can get it in.
Well,
so
yes.
You got to score. And we got too many guys that they look like the open field, something they're like, I've never seen this before.
Well, it's almost, sometimes Martinez bursts through. This probably doesn't even work, but I'm going to say it anyways because who gives a crap. Martinez will burst through and get into the open field, and he's like, have you ever gotten out of the shower and you don't have a towel and you got to kind of do that, like, naked, wet, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, I shouldn't be doing this, and you're trying to just get the towel and get back to, like, your bathroom rug as fast as possible. Like,
yeah.
He runs through, and then all of a sudden he's like a guy out of the shower, and he's like, oh, shit, where – I got to get back to
– Yeah, like, that's because – he doesn't look like he's comfortable.
Which is weird.
Because he's a quarterback, because these guys, they don't get hit ever. And they never have to finish, you know, running 50 or 80 yards. And they always run 15, 20 yards in practice. So he probably does that well. And then after that, you can tell he's never been hit.
Dude is terrible at finishing long runs. Like,
yeah.
I would say terrible at it.
Yeah, it doesn't look comfortable. To me, it's a comfort thing. Some guys look comfortable. Some guys don't. And he doesn't look comfortable.
So, but he had such a bizarre game. Any other scenario with any other able-bodied backup, he probably would have gotten pulled.
Yeah.
But he didn't, and he ended up finding his groove and played his ass off.
But that has big ramifications, Nick. I mean, if McCaffrey's healthy and Martinez gets pulled,
I think it's over for
him. It might be the end of Martinez.
I thought about that. Like, in some ways, I don't know exactly what happened with McCaffrey. Like, he probably got nicked up or something like that because he was on the sidelines. But I thought, like, as he was turning the ball over, I thought that exact thing. I said, this would be the end of Martinez if Luke McCaffrey wasn't hurt.
Yeah, if you get benched twice in the same season, I think that's it for you.
So then the question becomes, and let me give you – I want you to get your snapshot thoughts on this because we have literally months to discuss the quarterback situation moving forward. You're on the jury. You and I are in the – we're – jurors on the trial of Adrian Martinez. Have you reached a verdict?
I haven't yet, but I still go by the law of you're innocent until proven guilty. And so the man's innocent.
Okay, so time out. Is that insinuate? He can do it until he can't?
Yeah, he can do it until he's guilty. And when he's guilty, that means he's done. But he's not guilty.
The game is not.
We find you guilty of being unworthy of being quarterback. Yes. Yeah.
So he hasn't proven the game hasn't proven without a shadow of a doubt that he's guilty of not being able to do it.
He's had 4 weeks, and
Purdue, Iowa, Minnesota, Rutgers.
Yeah, and he's thrown by far the best, I think, percentage of his career in those four games.
Yes.
And that's the encouraging part. The turnovers in these last two games, I mean, this last game especially, it's like, ooh. I mean,
and he missed a lot of guys in that Minnesota game.
Minnesota missed guys, turnovers. That was the ugly Martinez game that we saw in those. But then the Rutgers finish, I think, brings him back to, like, I think we're still on the Martinez train until he's proven guilty.
Well, I mean, we're going way too far into this just like trial Law and Order thing. But, like, I was ready to say guilty. And then he had a great closing argument.
Yeah.
Like, he got that. His closing argument.
If the glove don't fit.
You must acquit. Like, he had a great closing argument. And that makes a big difference. Now, we'll get into later on in the pod here of what we think may or may not happen with the bowl game.
Sleeves. When the sleeves removed, there was no fumbles. I blame it on the sleeves.
If the sleeves remove, he found his groove. I rest my case. He was there. So... Johnny Cochran was his lawyer.
The sleeves
removed, did he not find his groove? Ladies and gentlemen, I'll rest my case. And he sat down and Adrian was like, this is good.
This is the best legal defense I've ever had.
So I don't know, man. He showed me a little bit of everything last night and had me feeling all sorts of emotions on whether or not I think he's the guy moving forward. But when you talk about all the issues that got to get rectified, there's a lot, but I'm not so sure the first one is figuring out that position.
Well, I think that's right. You got to figure it out. It's either Martinez has to find what he's been missing, or you got to find somebody that can do it.
See, and it'll be interesting to see what ends up happening, because I personally don't think Luke is the guy. And so to me, it's either Martinez or you got to go. See, I don't know enough about Smothers.
I don't know Smothers and the Kearney Catholic kid. I mean, he's going to be young. That's a long shot.
You get some rental, you know, you go find a grad transfer quarterback that you feel like you can plug in that can get, because this offense has to freaking get going.
Yeah. I think the hard part is this though, right? So you're going to have a guy that's had 4 years experience in this offense, or you go find somebody that has never run this offense.
Right.
And they're going to have to compete with this guy for, you know, spring ball and fall camp.
There's a chance, regardless of what decision you make, that Martinez is still the best option.
It's just his experience. I mean, in the end, it's like the guy's got a lot of experience.
But man, it's hard. I was one of those guys, like I've told you last week, I was open to Mackenzie Milton because I think you have to start winning games. And in order to win games, you got to get better quarterback play. And so, but I think it's going to be really fascinating what ends up happening at that position. Because especially, like, does Luke McCaffrey just want to run it back being a backup? You know, like, you know, what happens there?
Like, yeah, the Luke thing, though, is they gave Luke every opportunity to take that job.
Yeah, and he didn't do it.
No, I mean, I don't think he, that Illinois game was so bad.
Yes.
His two plays against Minnesota,
the jury was ready to reach.
They lost. I think they lost a little bit of confidence in what he can do in terms of his moxie and sort of that it factor when you come in and you kind of lose a little bit of that.
Side note, because we're steering so far off of the game right now. Like, this is supposed to be a game recap, but what ended up happening to the Ohio State usage of McCaffrey? Like, and I'm not, you and I talked about this a little bit off the air, but I'm not necessarily, because I don't want to be disingenuous, we turned on the mic and said that we didn't think that was a sustainable thing, but I'm surprised at, like, when you go back and watch that game, that offensive game plan and structure never even one time got replicated.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess for
me, they were just like dicking around in the Ohio State game. Like, yeah, let's just put Luke out there and like see what happens. And
maybe, I don't know. I guess I'm not as big of a advocate of like thinking that's a great idea.
Yeah. And I don't know what I think of it. I just think it's interesting.
Yeah.
I just think it's interesting that like for one game against the best team on your schedule, you did this and you had success with that. And you never even.
But that was really one play, right? It's one run, one play.
Now I'm like blanking on.
I think they ran that twice and one time it worked. And that's where I'm like, I don't know.
Check the stats on what he ended up. I thought he ended up leading. Yeah, but he probably got all of his rushing yards on that one carry.
Yeah, it was that carry. And then he was running from the quarterback position after that. He had one more of those counters
for
my back.
It's probably all a product of we remember that one play and we think like.
It'll do again. I mean, being a running back, having to run through the hole. I mean, there's a lot to playing running back every down, which means he will not take reps at quarterback, which he needs to take reps as the backup. Like in the end, people got to realize like that quarterback spot, you got to be able to have two guys. You can go, if this guy gets hurt, he's got to run this offense.
The other part of that too is there's a domino effect to entertaining what I'm throwing out there. If you entertain him at taking some time at running back and a wide receiver, well, guess what? Guess who's losing out on reps in practice?
Yeah.
Various running backs and various wide receivers. What are two positions that need to get developed big time? Running back and wide receiver. So do you really want to say, hey, Marvin Scott, you're not going to get these reps. It's going to Luke. Hey, Xavier Betts or Alante Brown or it would have been Marcus Fleming at the time. He's since left. Like, you're not going to get these reps. Luke's going to do this. Like, so then all of a sudden he's not getting quarterback reps and you're taking away reps from guys. So it's hard.
And that's where I think people don't think of it like that is there's only so many reps to go around to get good at what you're doing. You need reps. And so you got to have two quarterbacks. So it's either, I think you move Luke to receiver and say, Smothers, you're number two. And you let Luke focus on that. And if something changes, Luke could maybe swing back and start.
It's hard to do both.
It's really hard to do both well.
So, I mean, I don't know what we solved with Martinez's discussion there, but, I mean, do we feel good about how
we broke that down.
the run game. I mean, Mills finally got a rolling. I mean, the dude has 25 carries, 191 yards, didn't actually score a touchdown. Some of that was his own. He needed to try and find a way to get in there. And then some of it was some very odd goal line play calling, which I just don't like. The Chris Hickman, like all of a sudden you're running like a motion push pass to Chris. I mean, confusing a little bit. But the running back conversation, do you realize his performance last night helped salvage what would have been not only with our own eyes, probably the worst year for running backs in Nebraska history, statistically. But then also tangibly, when you look at the stats, like I was looking at this, John Bishop and I were looking at it at like halftime of a Creighton game, or it was before a Creighton game, so we were focused. We were looking at Nebraska football stats. Up until the Rutgers game, Nebraska had not had a running back with 100 yards rushing. Think about that. And I'm pretty sure, I thought John looked it up, up until then, the longest run from scrimmage for a running back was 16 yards.
That's glaring. That's the most glaring thing to me is that we didn't get a running back to get over. Like, I kept thinking 10 or 20 yards is all I ever saw this year. And, Nick, we didn't. Literally, you saw long runs this game, and we were like, what are those?
So Mills had a 50-yarder, And so I guess what I'm saying is, like, with one game, you got to at least be like, there was a scenario where you could end the season and go, Nebraska didn't have a 100-yard rusher, and Nebraska's longest run from scrimmage was under 20 yards. I think it was 16 yards with the running back. Like, that, I can't even begin to wrap my brain around it.
I can't either, that. And I don't know how to explain that. Like, I don't know how to explain that because I just know that there's got to be an issue with our running backs themselves, because that you can't say our line is can't
terrible
block
like that.
But I mean, we got zero production out of running the ball with our running backs.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. Like, again, I don't know. I mean, that is of all the on the low of all a lot of there's been a lot of criticism towards the receiving core. I'm not so sure the position group that has maybe underperformed the most isn't the running back spot.
There's no way you can argue with that. You really can't. I mean, I think with our assumptions of talent, I think we thought the running backs were more talented than maybe they are.
Well, and I think what ends up, the guy who ends up making that situation not look as bad as it really is Wandale.
Yeah.
Think if you couldn't slide Wandale in there. And again, what's hard is I don't think I have a great sense of how good Marvin Scott is or how good Ramir Johnson is or how good Ronald Tompkins is. Like I haven't seen a ton of them, but I've also there has to be a reason they're not getting on the field.
Yeah.
Especially considering how dire that situation was. And I've always felt like this, and I've said this to you before. I've always felt like of all the positions in any sport, I think the easiest position to have your Malcolm Gladwell blink, like, gut reaction, is this guy good or is this guy not good? The easiest position in sports to watch, like, one or two or three or four carries to be able to say, I like him or I don't know, I think is running back in football.
Yeah.
I think you see it pretty fast. And between those guys I just named, Johnson, Tompkins, Marvin Scott, I've never gotten that feeling watching any of them run that they're special.
Well, you look for burst, you look for a little wiggle, some elusiveness, and when nobody can get to the second level and make somebody miss and get more than 16 yards, like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a real problem. And that tells you that there's something missing in that running back room right now. I haven't seen the Morrison kid. They were talking about all the things that kept him out here. He was supposed to be good. And the kid coming in, but the people that we got, including Mills, who I think at least showed when the holes are there, he can be effective. But I mean, Mills didn't make it happen on his own this year.
No. I mean, I've never been the biggest Dedrick Mills fan. I think Mills is fine. Mills isn't special. Like, I mean, he's fine.
Well, what I'm trying to understand, too, is like,
so
they're talking
what
about
is it, though? Is it just, like, I think we're talking around the issue. Are these guys just not good enough? Because you keep on going, like, there must be something wrong in that. Like, what can be wrong? Like, running backs are pretty straightforward.
Nick,
like,
wrong is they're either not good enough or not good enough right now. So it's either they have talent that they're unable to use, maybe, or they're just not good enough. And that, I don't know what that is. I mean, some guys need time, right? Not everybody can play as a freshman. Some people, like, they need a few years to get stronger, bigger, more like physically capable to handle the load. But I don't know. I mean, to me, it looked like we don't have the guy in the building right now.
That's what I think. I think you're running your bell cow running back that you need and is a guy that is talented enough is not there.
Well, I mean, and I think Mills is talented enough if he's healthy, but now they say he might not even be on the team anymore. I mean, he might be looking at going pro or something, which I'm also kind of I'm scratching my head, like, on some of these guys that are acting like they're going to go pro, and I'm like,
what league?
Well,
what
league, that's what I mean. Like, I thought you had to be like a real pro. I don't know. Like, I just haven't seen the high prospect out of anybody that's like, what's not the benefit of coming back?
The only thing I could see with a guy like Mills is there is a shelf life to running back that he may, this is his fourth year of college, so he's an older guy. Maybe he just wants to get his, wants to try to get on a squad somewhere.
Well, he's not getting drafted. I mean, me, like, the season he had, you're not going to get drafted. I do think that he, like, if we're talking about talent, he's got enough talent, Nick, if he's healthy and things are going right, like, he could have a 1,000-yard year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he just had 200 yards easy.
Yeah, yeah, he could.
He could be a 1,000-yard guy, maybe not the greatest back in the history, but he could be a solid 1,000-yard guy. And that would help you get drafted. I don't think this year is going to help him get drafted.
Well, he hardly played this year. You know what I mean? Like
he played half the games and he didn't get over 50 yards most of the
games. And he had one good game.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't...
I'm trying to understand that a little bit.
All right, let's take a quick break from the podcast and talk to you guys about Runza. So, you know, I've told you guys about the fact that you can custom order your Runza sandwiches, which is obviously a game changer. You can add anything within reason to a Runza sandwich, different cheeses, maybe some fries, maybe some pickles, whatever. Since they all start out as an original Runza and are made to order, you can get creative. Well, I love getting tweets like this one from Joshua. He tweeted at me, tried the custom order tonight. Highly recommend you add ranch to the Runza with cheese. Hashtag Runza. Wow. Ranch on a Runza? I mean, that sounds incredible. Good work, Joshua. I'm going to have to give that one a try. You need to get to Runza and make your own masterpiece just like Joshua did. And when you're there, you need to tell him your buddy, your pal, your partner, your podcast buddy, Nick Baugh sent you. Runza makes it all better. And while we're here, let's talk about Pella windows and doors. I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. Let's pull up Pella's website right now. Look at this. Not one, not two, not three, not four, not five. Five different types of windows or doors by Pella have won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. I mean, that's incredible. And they achieve that in a couple of ways. You have the insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. You have types of low-E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. You have triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for windows and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella windows and doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Turn your window and door remodeling dreams into a reality with Pella. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. Back to the podcast. I don't know. I think there's something to, again, I feel like sometimes we're talking around the elephant in the room of like, well, even a guy like, and I'll just say, like, even a guy like Alante Brown. Now, receiver could be something totally different. But as a kickoff returner, he has never, on any of his kickoff returns, shown one millisecond, of being anything that resembles a dynamic, elusive, electric guy with the ball in his hands. Yeah. Not a millisecond. Not even like, ooh, good cut, and still got hit. Like, nothing. Zero. So, and again, I think sometimes guys like that pop quicker than you think they do. And so when you kind of go down like, and so I think the staff maybe needs to take a good hard look at how they're evaluating kids or something. Because like Greg Bell never saw it. Mo Washington saw it, but he flamed out and ended up being kind of a guy that you felt like was a little.
He was a little soft.
He was a little soft, but like at least I could see the. Like, Maurice had some...
He had some juice. Like, he could run.
But then you go, like, Alante Brown, eh. Wandale, yes. Marvin Scott, eh. Ronald Tompkins, eh. Ramir Johnson, eh. Xavier Betts, yes.
Yeah.
Fleming, doesn't matter, but eh. Like, you just go down the list.
Yeah. You see the juice or you don't kind of pretty quick.
I'm just going off of like, I'm not saying you can just write all those guys completely off, but like more, yeah, what I'm telling you
they
is
go
more.
In, they go into the they better develop category. And that category is like a big question mark. When you get put into the he's a developmental guy, it's a big question mark.
How many, other than Divino Zigbo, how many quote-unquote developmental running backs has Nebraska ever really had? Like a guy that was – a guy that made you go, yeah, early in his career, and by the end of his career, you were like, fuck, bro, if you – this dude,
so Zigbo's – I mean, for sure the only one. Other than that, Rex and Amir played his freshman.
And were good.
Were good. And they played behind guys that were really good so that they were – you know, they didn't necessarily start, but they – you couldn't keep them off the field almost.
I guess what I'm getting at is when I hear when people talk about developmental players, I don't think of running backs. I think of D linemen, O linemen, yeah. Linebackers, corner. Like I don't. To me, running back's not a developmental position. I'm not saying you can't. You got to improve. Hear what I'm saying. I'm not saying like you don't improve. You of course improve and all those things. But like running back is kind of you either got it or you don't.
I as a former running back, I lean towards what you're saying. So
I don't like go like I got to give him time to develop. I'm like name one running back that ever became anything special that didn't pop right away.
I mean the. I never want to pretend like there's not circumstances where guys are dinged up or they, you know,
sure.
they need some confidence.
I'm
or they
going.
Need to get
I'm strong. Being over the top.
I know. But yeah. I know. But I guess my point is, I don't like to ever put these kids down, especially when they're young. But I mostly agree with you that running back's a position you usually see it pretty quick.
So that's something that like is concerning when you start extrapolating like. And moving forward and projecting like, okay, you better get that quarterback figured out. Okay.
Well, that's part of why.
You better find a good-ass running back.
I mean, we're kind of giving Mills crap about going pro, but like part of that's about we would rather have him come back.
Oh, like, hell yeah. That's I'm like, not the biggest Mills guy in the world, but like
this is the campaign to bring him back more than it is trying to say, well, he's not going to get drafted. It's more like, no, come back so that you can get drafted.
Right. And so – yeah, there's the elephant in the room with a lot of these discussions that are awkward to say out loud. And I'm not, when I'm saying these things, I'm not necessarily going all in like these guys never are going to be anything. They could.
Yeah, you're saying, what are you seeing with your eyes?
What are you seeing with your eyes?
Yeah.
And I guess for me, you and I have watched a lot of Nebraska football in our life. When I rack my brain and think about running backs in Nebraska history, anybody that became a great run that anybody that was a good running back there by the time they were a junior and a senior, they were pretty good as a freshman and a sophomore.
Here's one of the hard things maybe to accept is, or even to understand those. We've also been probably up there there's maybe three schools that you could argue have had as good a running backs as we've had over the last 50 years. I mean, we're talking Mike Rozier, Roger Craig,
LP Amon Green,
Buck Halter, Dan Alexander,
Roy Helu, Rex Burkhead, Amir Abdullah.
I mean, you name it. Like
I mean, really, all the, like those 90s teams. I mean, the third and fourth string guys were like Clinton Childs and Damon.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and those were good.
Really good
those
players.
Those were really good. Yeah. Like, Damon's a really good player that, like, was the second, third string guy. And you go,
what stood out to me is watching that 94 national championship game in our Husker Classic recaps. You know who popped in a few of his kickoff and punt returns? Was Damon.
Yeah.
Like, Damon looked good on a couple of his times he got the ball. And you're like, wow. But then you go, well, look who's in front of him, you know? Like, it's hard. And so, but to your point,
and
we are a little
lead blocking on those kickoffs.
Yeah. But to your point, it's we are a little spoiled where if there is one position that has been excellent at Nebraska, so the bar is really high. My bar for a good running back is like, well, are you Amir?
That's what you're comparing. Like, yeah, like Nick, none of them are. No, that's the answer. None of them are Amir, but the difference is, and I brought that up because I was thinking about like Illinois and Northwestern and some of these, like I'm watching some of these games. Their running backs, Nick,
are better.
They're better than ours, but they're not good. They're not like Amir either.
Right, but they're better.
They're playing better than our guys are.
Ibrahim is better.
Oh, E.T. Ibrahim is better. I'm talking about like some of these schools that have never had the premier guys consistently like we have. They get production out of guys that are like okay athletes, But they definitely are playing better and making more plays.
Totally agree.
We're not making plays, and we're trying to figure out, well, why is that?
Outside of probably, I'm going to tell my head, the Purdue game, I don't think they had a very good running back. And probably last night, too, against Rutgers, I think I would have traded the other team's running back. Like, I'd have rather had the other team's running back than Nebraska's running back.
Oh, I mean, obviously you take Minnesota's guy. You take
Goodson. Iowa. You take Ohio State's guy.
Goodson's the best.
Goodson's
I think,
a baller, in the man. I love that guy.
You take Ohio State's. You take
Northwestern's white boy.
Nah, you don't want him. Yeah, you. I think you take Penn State's. Maybe I don't know. No, their guy was hurt. Never mind. No.
I still feel like I'd take Penn State's guy.
No, I think if Mills is healthy, I think you'd take.
Look at
take
you,
Mills.
Big Mills guy.
I'm a Mills guy. Turns out, I'm a Mills guy.
You know what? What would we find out? We found out Mills is a Mills guy. Yeah. Anything else with the offense? I did like how about the final drive? That's how you close it out. That's how you close that bitch out. And you and I have been, you know, we got to be fair because you and I have been critical at times of late game management. I think you've seen the maturation over the last, you know, from year one till now of Frost's willingness to like, hey, don't got to go up tempo all the time. He let the clock bleed down and then, you know, the way they were running the ball last night, I thought the O-line played really well. I mean, you don't rush for freaking whatever they – I mean, what'd they end up, 350, 365?
Yeah. The O-line did a good job, especially late, being able to, you know, keep them out of the backfield, you know, continually getting just positive yards in the end of the game. I mean, that's just – then you can just lean on the run, bleed the clock, and you – I mean, it saved us from having to take any chances and – you know, put the defense on the field one last time, which we've seen in the past. Like, that's a coin flip thing.
Yeah.
So that's how you do it, though.
That's how you do it. So you bleed clock, and you know, you got to make a play. You know what I mean? You got a
couple first downs.
Couple first downs. You bleed that thing out and end it. You know, ice that thing. Get in the victory formation. But the defense, too. Let's go to the defensive side. You good with that?
Yeah.
I mean, once again, like, you look at their numbers. And it's not like Rutgers is terrible. Now, granted, Vedra was hurt, but their backup had come in a few games and done okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they held Rutgers to 9 first downs, 2 of 13 on third down, which they had been bad on third down, so that was good to see. 252 total yards. And let's be honest, they had an offense that turned the ball over 4 times. They had special teams play horrible. They gave up a kickoff return. Like, they were getting no help from their offense for a decent chunk of that game. And special teams wasn't good. And they still stood up. And so Cam Taylor played well. Garrett Nelson played well. I know we say it every week, but like, man, that side of the ball has really, really, really taken a step forward.
I mean, to me, I it was amazing. During that game, I still felt confident in our defense, even if Rutgers took the ball over at the 50. I was like, man, I just don't feel like they can do anything on us right now. I really felt that way. I mean, they couldn't run it. You know, they could barely throw it. I mean, it was one of those, it was an impressive performance. I mean, those guys were in tough spots and they never got down. They never looked defeated. And you got to give them kudos because that's an improvement. I'll tell you what I've been saying all year. Like, they have improved. They're physical. Like, they're playing physical. I mean, we still have a hard time really rushing the passer. Just with a 4-man rush.
Yes.
But besides that, we're playing pretty good defense.
What have you seen from Henrich? I mean, he led the team in tackles. He's had a couple of good games here.
He's still making a couple of, you know, it's a missed tackle or play here. They're like one or two a game. And then he's solid. He plays hard. He knows what he's doing. Good football instincts. That guy's a good player.
Like, so, is he a potential, like, all Big Ten linebacker by the time his career is over?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean you know, like those Northwestern linebackers,
right?
Like, those guys, I think there was two of them. They're all Big 12. I mean, all Big 10.
Like, Henrich isn't a freak, but he's going to be like,
no, but he's really good. Like, he's big and he's good. He's 6'3", 240-ish,
right?
And he can run. He can think. He can, you know, he can play ball. So, Nick, he's a freshman.
Yeah,
he's got 4 years to go. I mean, as long as I think for him, it's stay healthy.
Right.
You know, Reimer is maybe a better athlete. But Henrich is also like a really good football. So those, you got Reimer and you got Henrich for 2-3 years each, you know?
Yeah, that group, like, need to get one more good. You need a good middle linebacker.
Yeah, they got the kid from Northern Iowa coming, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a two-year starter for them, and he was pretty good. And then Honus might come back. I mean, Honus is the one that's like, I don't think Honus is, you know, the NFL's knocking down his door right now. So
he maybe needs another good year of film. Yeah, and he seems like he's getting better. Am I wrong?
Well, remember, this is his second year after that knee surgery. So, you know, I think this was more the Honus that he was kind of expected to be. And so you give him one more year, I think he could have a really good next year, too. I think the hard part for Honus would be keeping Henrich and Reimer off the field.
Right. Do you think Cam Taylor can get drafted? Like, who's the most draftable player on the team?
Well, it must be Hymus. I mean, he opted out.
Okay, yeah.
But see, even Hymus, I didn't think he's like a top round guy. So I'm surprised he opted out.
Right.
I mean, everybody, I guess, has their own reasons. But I was surprised with that.
I wonder what I was thinking about him last night. Like, you're sitting there. Did he go? Was he on the trip?
No, I don't think so.
Like, I wonder what that'd be. I just couldn't imagine. Like, that's just like an interesting,
I don't know how I feel. I was thinking about the other night, and I'm like, you know, I'm trying not to be hard on these kids.
Yeah, you don't want to be like, man, these kids, and they're selfish, and they're Instagram, and snap face. And
I mean, that's kind of how I feel, but Nick, you couldn't have summed it up better.
That's kind of how I feel. That's great.
But even, you know, I'm just like, I can say it because I've been through it. Like, you know, I had a chance to be drafted, and was I not going to play my last game? I mean,
I can't wrap my mind. I don't know. Here's
what I understand. All right. You're a top 50 or a top 100 pick. Okay. And maybe he is. Maybe I am unaware of this.
I don't think so.
Maybe he's like, I'm a third round guy. That's top 100, right? So first three rounds are 100 picks.
That would astonish
right?
me. Four. But yeah. How good are you when you don't play and your team has their best rushing day?
I don't know. I mean,
some of that could have been play calling, but continue. Sorry.
Yeah. So I guess I never really understand, like, you're a senior, you're not a top 50 pick or 100 pick where it's like, hey, if I blow up my knee in this last game, it's going to cost me millions of dollars. Like, I get that. If you're a sixth round pick, I was like a sixth round pick, right? Which is the lowliest of the lows almost, right?
Right. Look at you denigrating getting drafted in the
NFL. I know.
NFL,
that's the way you do it. But no.
Man, who didn't get drafted in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean,
right? Show of hands of who didn't go in the sixth round.
But I guess I would have never considered not playing or even a bowl game. I would have played. Like,
well, yeah,
you know,
I can understand. Like Christian McCaffrey, I can wrap my mind around him not playing in the bowl game.
But he did play.
Did he end up playing?
He did, and he torched Michigan.
Well, maybe it was Fournette that said.
Fournette didn't, yeah. So that, like, I would have understood McCaffrey not playing, and McCaffrey had his best game of his career against Michigan, and everybody went, oh, that guy's on. Like, I think it helped his draft stock to play in that game. And, you know, but
I guess
but
like,
I understand.
Like,
I understand. Not
I understand.
Playing.
Like, you're sitting there, you're going, okay, especially if you're like you're Leonard Fournette, you're going to be a top 10 pick or whatever.
You can't hurt your ankle.
You cannot go in there and blow your knee out or something like that. And you do that, you blow a ton of money.
Tens of millions of dollars.
I can wrap my mind around that. But like you said, like, what are you preserving your fifth, sixth round, like, I don't know. So, whatever. I don't really care.
And that might have come off harsh. I just, like...
No, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know people's circumstances, but to me, I always go, man, just finish it. Just finish it. Like, you've come that far. Like, if you're going to opt out the whole season, okay.
There's no way he was sitting there last night on his couch watching that game, watching his teammates get knocked onto the turf, get back up, rally, run the ball. They're hooting. They're celebrating. They find a way to win. There's no way he was sitting on the couch feeling good. But whatever. I don't care about
that. I don't know.
Like,
everybody's got their own thing. And I guess I am more old school with that stuff where it's like you make a commitment to your team in a way that I just kind of – I don't know that I understand that. That
right.
thought process.
I don't either. I don't.
I understand it for the money. If it's for the money, I get it. But if the money's not like a guarantee, then you kind of are going, well, what are we talking about then?
I just don't know where you draw the line on, like, well, if this Rutgers game didn't matter, Why did the Minnesota game matter? Yeah. And then why did the Purdue game matter? Like, where did it matter?
you don't have to play you don't have to play any games in any season, right? So at what point do you say,
point is it like, no, now, Matt, now I'm going to play?
Now it's like, or it's like, my game was so good last week, they said I'm getting drafted. Like, I don't know. where does it happen?
So whatever. Real quick before we kind of like, we have a bunch of different things. We're like, how far are we into this? We're like an hour, 55 minutes.
We even talked about the game.
Hey, you guys listening out there? We've just had a couple of things with the game, I think.
We've had thoughts.
Any more, like, these recap pods end up, we get into, like, big picture things. I mean, I don't want to be like, in the second down when they ran a dive, I would have ran a toss sweep. What do you think? I mean, we'll get into, like, specific things. Like, that game, I don't know. Like, I didn't like some of the goal line play calling. I thought Martin. We've got into the game, man. I mean, I don't know. What do you want from us, man? A recap of the game? Come on. What do you think this is? A recap pod? Come on. The special teams. Like, help me out, man. I mean, because it wasn't like they lost special teams. They got annihilated in special teams.
Yeah. So that to me is if we're going to talk big picture Scott Frost stuff at all, it's going to involve special teams because that's his responsibility. And I still think there is a little part of him that is more interested in the
other stuff
where that's going to be of anything. If you want to see where we are next year as a team,
they have to.
We got to be better there. We got to be better there.
No better. You can argue they're just other than the like. What's weird is they got the kickers better. I mean, Culp ended up being an All Big Ten kicker, but everything else is just as atrocious.
Yeah, the kickoff return, punt return,
awful.
And then the punt return team looks especially bad because they've given up those two fakes. So I mean that's you know he's gonna have to take it upon himself even more than he did last year to say, and I think he's gonna keep his play calling duties would be my guess, and that's something Tom Osborne I think suggested he did. I read somewhere that was like a TO thing, is he thinks that's good for the head coach to be involved with that. But a lot of people think, man, the head coach should be
more of a CEO.
I think Frost is going to have to find a balance somewhere between.
Does he need to go hire a special teams? I mean,
they had this consultant,
whatever,
and maybe you got to have somebody that does it. Like,
I mean,
I don't know how that works, but I'll tell you this: they're going to have to relook at that.
Can you explain to me? And then we'll get to the bowl game and all that stuff here in a second. But like, I feel like I have a decent grasp on football, but I have no grasp on the special teams and what goes into the back end of it that makes it good or not. Like, help me understand that. Because
Nick, you know, when you got Brandon Rigoni out there.
Right. So is it more, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is it more X's and, or is it more Jimmy's and Joe's and less X's and O's?
Yes. It's the guys you got. So you got to have. And here's the misnomer. You want guys that are just going to play their butts off, right? But you can't have guys that are bad athletes out there either. Like you got to. I always thought one of our buddies, like Ben Eisenhart, was a great special teams guy. Like he was as good at special teams as he was. Like some guys are almost better at special teams than they are every down football. Yep. Like Rigoni, he couldn't play every down football, but he was our special teams captain, and he was really good at it. And, and Nick, he worked like religiously all those little like
the details
he was the gunner, he was the missile on the kickoff, and he was a problem. He was a real problem for these other teams. They were always trying to double team him,
right?
And he was a nightmare for everybody. And he was 5 foot nothing, you know, 100 nothing, but he was fast and he played so hard. But he also knew what he was doing. So there are guys that are built actually to be better at special teams than they are
every down.
Every down. Yeah. I was actually a kind of a bad special teams player. I played hard. I played hard and I do it. I kind of wasn't naturally as good at it.
Right.
I just wasn't built to be like the as much of like a run and hit guy. We're just like flying with. I was under control.
Yeah,
like you were cerebral. Yeah. That part of the game came way more. And there are guys that Nick that part of the game is just hard. They can't go sideways.
Yeah.
They can't go backwards. They can't read. They're more just like they want to run down and hit. Those guys need to find their way in the field. But I think we got some. Like, you know, we've got some of these receivers out there that they don't look like they are good at covering.
And usually would think a receiver isn't going to be a good tackler.
Well, that's one of my point is there.
You know what I mean? Like, so maybe Frost needs to rethink who he's putting on.
Well, there's always a reason. There's a reason why guys are out there is because they're doing the job. But doing the job in the game is always harder than practice.
Right.
You find out when you go against people who are good at special teams, it's really eye opening. The people that are good at that, it's a whole nother skill set,
right?
And yeah. So I think a lot of our guys, they get in the game and all of a sudden they actually get blocked on kickoffs. Like, in practice, I bet they don't get touched,
right?
And that's the problem.
So I guess, but what's funny about that is we're going back to this. Because a part of schematics could be how you're structuring practice and working on special teams, too.
Sure.
I'm curious. I'd be interested to see what that looks like on a day-to-day basis. And I'd be curious how that's changed even after struggling on special teams. You know what I mean? Like, how much did their day-to-day special team stuff change from last year to this year? Because if it did, boy, it didn't really yield a better product.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, it's like it's less. I don't think it's like now we're running this kind of return. Like, I don't think. I really think it's.
But you got to work. How much? Give me a typical practice and how much time you're allotting to work on special teams. And is that because sometimes I think of special teams as being the thing that you know how coaches they got their practice plan in their hand, right?
Yeah.
And. I've been there. You'll get to your stuff, and then you'll get to certain things. You're like, we'll get to that tomorrow, or we'll.
That you never that'll never happen. They'll always do special teams. Usually, you spend. I'm just going back to my.
Yeah, because I'm curious. I don't know.
We would start. We would before practice started. We'd do punt team every day. We always did punt team, and then you would go through all the special teams at some point again.
Okay.
So you always did punt team basically twice a day. And I think they did that because that was always – they felt like the hardest to get right.
It's a full sprint. And
It's like you never want to get a punt blocked because – I don't know. So we always –
Yeah, it's a big boomer bust play.
Yeah, that was always like the thing we spent the most time with was – and I was always on punt team, and that was like we spent so much time. You can tell them you got to do what you got to do. Sometimes it's punt team. Especially when you're a senior, like, okay, punt team, all right.
Okay, sorry, keep going. I could picture you with horrendous body language trotting over to
punt. It's a lot of punt team. Some days you're just like, punt team again? Oh, man.
Meanwhile, Rigoni's like, yes!
Rigoni just would wait all practice till,
it was time to...
Oh, and he would just destroy people. But you need, that's what you need. You need 10 of those guys, and you're good.
Right. You'd have probably had Eisenhart and Rigoni, like,
yeah, that solves. Their like, yeah, they're like, good. They're really good at that.
Right.
But you also, and to me, it's like all your backup safeties, corners, and linebackers, and defensive ends should be like when you got good depth. Those guys should be good, talented guys for special teams. And to me, I looked at that kickoff and. I looked at the guys we had out there, and I went, "Why are those guys out there?"
Right. I've always, in my mind, I've always viewed special teams as like depth and putting an importance on it. And yeah. I know that's probably
Bingo.
Stupid, but that like I always feel like the teams that are good at special teams, they have depth and they make it a priority.
Yeah.
And so I guess I'm just wondering, like.
But that's got to come from the head coach.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I just wonder what that is looking like in Frost, how he's planning and structuring things on a day-to-day basis. And I would think he's got to take a hard look at.
Oh yeah,
switching that up because
I think there was probably an intentional shift to really focus on it this year, and I think whatever they did there. They got to look at that again and go, well, maybe we got to spend even more time. You know what I'm saying? Like, you really, find out in this league, it's a field position league, and we lost that field position battle.
Every single
I think we won
game.
Purdue.
Yeah, it might have been it.
We won Purdue, and we won the game.
Right.
Maybe Penn State. I think we maybe won at Penn State and Purdue. I think we had a pretty
probably.
Good field.
I guess I can't remember the those.
I think we were on our side of the field more in, against both those teams, and we won.
But you're right. In this league, it's a field position, meat and potatoes, like that stuff, the hidden yardage stuff that makes a difference. But and maybe heading into – maybe the kicking situation was so bad a year ago that they felt like we just got to figure out the kicking.
Yeah.
And that's fixing – I'm doing air quotes here. That's fixing special teams. Well, it's like, yeah. I mean, Colt makes a big difference, but you still were just as atrocious on everything else.
Yeah, I think it really – to me, it showed – later in the year, I felt like it got
worse.
It really wasn't a factor. I feel like we're kicking the ball. It got cold. It got cold, and we struggled more with it as the year went on.
Man! I mean, so the little moon ball kick too is just like looks like your boy when he's from like he's got like an 80-yard approach shot. And he hits that bitch like 50 yards.
We need to hit it 80.
So, okay.
Was that positive or negative?
Well, we're not done. Okay.
We won the game.
Yes, no, we've been positive.
You
I mean,
play
shit.
To win
you
the
play
game.
You play to win the game.
You play to win the game.
Playoffs? You're talking about special teams? Okay. Before we get to the Alifast takeaway and get the F out of here, bowl game. Frost was asked about it after the game. Obviously, you got to get an invite. You know, there's a bunch of different things. You know, you got to get asked to the dance before you can turn someone down to go to the dance. But bowl game. Frost said, you know, it's been a long, rough year.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the pulse of the guys on the team and see if they got any gas left in the tank. Where do you come out on the bowl game conversation?
Well, I think the year's over. I think they're not going to play. What's funny, I've heard mixed reports. Some people are like, say they're leaning towards playing. I think they're not for a couple reasons. You don't get the bowl game experience. You're going to have to, you're a tired.
You're playing like in a week.
So you don't get to go anywhere. So you miss Christmas and you got a really tired team that has to practice another week and then go fly somewhere that's out of state for a day to play the game. That, you know, it's not a bowl game.
Agree.
The bowl game experience was go there, you get a week to sort of practice and experience life and have fun, and it's a reward. The reward right now might be like, can we just go home for Christmas? They haven't seen their families in 8 months, right? So I get the sense that
they're ready to be done.
They're ready to be done, and somebody else is probably going to have to turn down a bowl game. So like it has to be like Minnesota or somebody has to be like, no, we don't want to play. And then Nebraska gets the opportunity would be my guess. So my guess is that it's a 50-50 whether we get an invite. But I would lean towards – I would think they're probably not going to play.
So
do you think they're going to play?
I don't. That's my read. I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like I'm like Texan Davidson, like, huge bowl game. You in? You in, bro? I'm not
Greg
doing
Sharp,
that.
Do you want to go to the bowl game?
Greg Sharp, do you want to go some touchdowns? Do you want a touchdown in a bowl? And it's a bowl game touchdown. But I see this both ways. I really do. I can understand how everybody's just wiped. This is worn on people mentally, emotionally, physically. Like you said, these guys haven't – I think Martinez was quoted as saying that he hasn't seen his family since March.
Yeah. It's a long time.
It's a long time. So I can certainly understand how you could be like, let's just be done. And on top of that, I can certainly understand why – did it not kind of feel like that Rutgers game was a nice way to end it? Like a nice way – everybody was – you won – a lot of guys walked off the field feeling pretty good about themselves. You had a happy locker room. You had a happy plane ride home. Everybody leaves feeling good. There's value in that.
Yeah.
But, and then there's also the reality of what you're saying is you don't get the bowl game experience. And a huge part of what you want in a bowl game too are like the there's value in that couple weeks of practice. Like the more you're not getting that.
You're not getting the developmental practice.
So the traditional lens at which we view the value of a bowl game isn't really how it is.
So let me tell you this. If the bowl game was this, okay, it's what's the date today?
December 19th.
Let's say it's January 10th. We play, I don't know, we play Texas. Okay. We get Christmas off, and then we get 2 or 3 weeks of developmental practice where it's like we get to have the young guys actually take a lot more of the reps that haven't got to play this year, and they get to scrimmage, they get to play, the old guys get to rest, they get to finish up school, and then they get to go somewhere and be on the beach or whatever. We do that 10 times out of 10. This is not that. This is just sort of like bowl games. We're trying to still incorporate them into this weird year, and you got 5 days to get here, and you come for a day and go.
Right.
And that's sort of like, I don't know. I just think it's such a different experience that I wouldn't feel as bad about them not doing it.
Agree. But then the other side of the coin is this. And not that this matters. The first part of what I'm going to say, not that it matters. The second part does matter. Is it kind of odd that you have been, Nebraska has been the poster child of, we want to play, we want to play, anywhere, anytime, we want to play, fucking let us play, why can't we play, let us play, we want to play. And then get presented with the opportunity to play and be like, nah, we don't want to play.
But here's where I'll disagree with that. Because we were willing to play in August, September, and October.
Right.
And they wouldn't let us. And we were there ready.
Right.
It's like you play the NBA Finals and you're like, hey, LeBron, we're thinking another week. You're like, no. You know, like you just play, you know, like when you finish a season, which we just did, the season's over. This is not a scheduled game for us. This is an invite to do something extra. This is extracurricular activity. Like if we don't go play Rutgers because we're like, now we're done. That to me is different. Like this is like our season's over. And it's like, would we like to volunteer to play another game? We would if you give us a month. We might say, you know, in a week, we'd just rather not.
Right. I guess I'm just saying that there is that element of it. And you've been...
People might spin that, too.
Yeah, like you've been, I want to play, I want to play, I want to play. And then when you get presented with the opportunity to play another game, you turn it down. The optics of that, while I understand, and if you get inside of them, make sense to a certain extent... Yeah. On the surface, though, they're a little bit like, well, what happened to this anytime, anywhere mantra?
Well, I would argue we've lived the mantra. We've completed the season as we know it. And it's like you have to take into account, like, people are physically and mentally done. Like, that's real. That's a real thing. So, like, I don't think people should go out of their way to, like, you know, try to, like, spin that in a negative way.
I'm not sitting here saying like, hey, Pat 40, you know, dial up a scathing column.
Hey,
you know,
Pat but
like,
40 will find a way.
I just think it's an interest. It's just kind of interesting to be that and then not want to play. But the big thing is, and this is where the argument for the bowl game is. More so than anything else. Like, I'm with you on you need these developmental practices, all that stuff, but like more so than anything else, this program needs games. They need to play as many games as they can physically play. So in that sense, I'm like, man, any opportunity you get to play a game, there is a ton of value in continuing to learn how to function within the framework of a game and finding a way to win, situational football, all those kinds of things, coming out on the right end of a game. Because this team has practiced a ton. Frost has talked about how they become best week of practice, all that stuff. Like, you need a game. There's a big difference between a practice and a game. So, like, on that front, I'm like, man, like, so there is this part of me that's a little uncomfortable with the idea of knowing that this program needs games that you're going to turn down again.
You know, I think you got a little bit of a point there. And Nick, I'm totally guessing, but they might end up playing a bowl game.
Yeah.
And it might be in a week. It might be in 2 weeks. I don't know.
Right.
Most likely, probably it would be within a week.
Think it'd be in a week with what's available. And
I thought there was like five bowl spots for Big Ten teams, and I don't think we're in the top five. So it would have to be literally like there would have to be at least five or six
turned down. Yeah,
no, there'd have to be like three or four teams. Three teams maybe turn them down. Because are we? Well, I guess now that we've won three games, we might be considered like
eligible.
Well, we jumped a bunch of people. There's a bunch of two-win teams. Like Wisconsin's got two wins.
Right.
So somebody could offer Wisconsin, who's got two wins, or they could offer us, who's had three. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets the actual offer and who's the backup.
And I'd be curious what goes into the offer, because like Nebraska was always such an attractive team to offer to a bowl game because they traveled. The fans traveled, but they can't travel.
We bring viewership.
Viewership. So I would think Nebraska would be an attractive team for a bowl.
That's going to be the argument. Even though we've only won three games, like there's a good argument that Nebraska still draws that many eyes that somebody will offer us. But like I said, it's going to be Frost says he's going to let the players decide, and you know maybe they're give them a day rest and they'll say, actually, we feel like we can go. You know.
Yeah. So I again. I wish I could come on here and have a definitive take on what I see it both ways. I see how people are totally spent. I see how people are physically banged up, mentally, emotionally, just like exhausted. I also think that like ending on a good note, there's real like people, let's be honest, you feel better. All the same issues are there, but like you just feel better about things because Nebraska ended with a win.
No question. And that's, I mean, that I don't know if that should be – that shouldn't be
that
a
shouldn't factor.
Factor
into it.
And I
but
don't
it,
think it will. I think it's going to be the sort of the health and psyche of where they're at. And then like I say, it's not your typical bowl game situation. So it's really a coin flip on whether you should or you shouldn't in my mind.
I'm really trying to put myself back into like a player's – I feel like even if I wouldn't have wanted to play – let's say deep down inside, I knew I was like, I don't want to go play. Like, let's say my senior year. So, you know, I went to the NCAA tournament my junior year, and then my senior year went to the NIT. Let's say it wouldn't have been an NIT, and it would have been one of the, like, the CIT or CBI, and Coach Altman would have been like, Bob, well, you talk to the guys, bud. You tell them what you guys can vote and what you want to do. You know, even if I would have felt like I don't want to play, I feel like I'd had a hard time saying no. So I guess what I'm getting at is
I would
see
too.
I'm saying?
Nick, I would too. I think this year is probably it's the weirdest year ever.
Right.
Right. So I mean the difference too is that like you didn't have to do all the BS
totally.
For an entire 6 months before that. I think that's the part that has compounded so much is it's like it's been these guys have been quarantined essentially.
Right.
For months. Testing every day. I mean, they're just, I think that's the part they're just like,
I'm done.
I mean, kids always want to play that extra game.
Yeah. So I guess that's the thing is I don't know what it would have been like to play during these pandemic circumstances, but I just know for me, it would have been really hard to actually say no to playing, but it'll be interesting. So I guess what I'm saying is it'll be interesting to see how they end up voting and how it gets, presented if they do get offered a bowl and they turn it down.
A bowl that you go to where you go to a hotel, you cannot leave, there's no fans, and you get to be there for one day. You're like, what's the point, right? Like, what are we doing?
Even you and I, we've been talking with our buddy Willie. We have a credit because we had a Vegas trip planned in May, last May, and it got, obviously, with COVID, it all got shut down, but we have that credit, and so we've all been talking, well, when do we want to go back? When are we going back? Of course, our buddy wants to go like now, and we're sitting there going, well, you don't want to go to Vegas now is not real
it's
Vegas.
It's not Vegas.
A bowl game now is not a real bowl game.
Yeah, just call an extra, you know, like an extra like
road game.
Road game is all you're getting.
I mean, it's not a bowl game.
And you know what, though? In the end, I did actually like what you said about sometimes you just need games. And That's not a, that's the best argument for playing.
If,
like,
if
you get
someone
to play
said,
more
what's
games.
Your biggest argument for playing? It would be you guys need games. Like if Frost came in here and said, what do you think? I'd say you guys need games. You need as many games as you can possibly play. Because you have a lot of stuff that you got to get better at, and a lot of it can only get fixed like in a you need to get in a game.
Yeah.
So I don't know. My guess is they don't play.
Well, but, I mean, we'll see if they even get the offer, too.
Right. Yeah. All right, Allofast takeaway. Internet, baby. Got to have it. You got it when you're Zooming Tom Izzo, when you are you're working from home, internet's never been more important. The access to the all-fiber network in Lincoln and across the state, second to none. I also love the TV. I mean, they want me to push the internet, but the TV's fantastic, too. Just the reliability, the speed. Again, my wife can be streaming something. I can be streaming something or downloading something. My daughter can be watching something. And it's everything is perfect. I'm talking perfect. Make the switch. Go to allofiber.com. Allofiber.com. Tell them Nick Boss sent you to wrap this thing up. Allofast takeaway. I mean, for this Nebraska-Rutgers game, I think it's my first thought would be I just can't quit you, Adrian Martinez, for as much as you – As much as
we've been,
I don't want to go all Brokeback Mountain on him and just be like, I wish I knew how to quit you. But that I'm pretty much Brokeback Mountain with Adrian Martinez.
That's what you're trying to say.
Is that what I'm trying to say?
I was wondering what you're getting at. No, I think I mean to me it's the Frost Martinez roller coaster continues and. We went down, and the second half came, and we came back up, and we're sitting back on a high note heading into next season. So, to me, it's been a roller coaster. That game was a roller coaster. We'll see if we can ever just
– It's that's it. All of the ingredients and elements and things that make me think Nebraska's got a long ways to go. And they ain't winning anything special anytime soon. We're all prevalent in that game.
Yeah.
And all of the things that I can point to for optimism that, hey, this team's closer than maybe their record would indicate. And there's some stuff heading in the right direction. We're all prevalent in that game.
Yeah.
Like if you want to know what Nebraska football is in 2020, just watch that game. You saw a lot of stuff that was like, is this the worst team in the last 50 years, and then you're like
600 yards
and unbelievable flashes of quarterback play, and the defense was great, like in spurts. It's just so it's everything wrapped into one.
We got
one
it there. All, and we end with a big question mark, and we get to wait it out till 2021.
Yeah, how about that? All right, well, we are at an hour and 23 minutes, and I'm not sure if we actually talked about the game.
Did we talk about the game?
I don't know. You guys can email me, nick@nickbaugh.com. Hit me on Twitter @nickbaugh. And tell me, did we talk about the game? I'm not totally sure. I'm not totally sure. Well, and there's a part of me that wants to do a bowl game, so I love recap pods.
That's the best reason for the bowl game.
We're going to fire up remember, we stopped the Husker Classic recaps 6 weeks in. We have 7 more weeks. You know what game is next on the docket? 2001 Oklahoma.
Oh.
You know what we maybe need to do? Do I get a third mic in here and do we bring Barrett Rood in? Would he potentially, maybe sometime in December or in January, sometime. I mean, he would could speak to that game.
Yeah.
He was
there.
We have to.
I think he'd
have his people get in touch with my people.
I'll talk to him.
We'll do that. All right. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. We'll see you next time in a little recap pod. All right. My thanks to Pella. If you're thinking about a new window or a new door, now is the time. Check them out online on the web at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And my thanks to my good friends at Runza. Best fries on the planet. Great burgers. Cheese Runza. Delicious. The food is simply fantastic. Runza makes it all better.
A Huda Media Production.